let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. The book It's Life, Jim, is a journey through a life of battling homosexuality, self-hatred, religious obsession, suicidal desperation, guilt, shame, loss, and into a world of unconditional love and acceptance. It's a spiritual journey that breaks through tradition and dogma to discover the depth of what it means to live loved. It's the spiritual journey of our guest on the program, Jim Marjoram, author of It's Life, Jim, and he joins us via Skype from New Zealand on This Week in America. Hi, Jim. Welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Hi, Rick.
This is going to be an interesting conversation. So many important topics that you address in the book. Let's start off very basically, the inspiration for the book and what your thoughts as you were putting this together, because you're sharing your life in order to help other people. Talk about how this all came about.
Yeah, exactly. Well, originally, it started when my wife died back in 2011. And for me, as will be made evident through the book and as we chat, it was a complete turnaround. It almost destroyed my life. And in the process, I had to come out as a gay man and so on. So the book came as a process. Originally, I did a lot of blogging and journaling to sort of collect my thoughts and see where I was going. And some friends said, well, why don't you put it in a book? You know, people would be interesting to write about. And it sort of all slowly fell into place over a couple of years. It took a couple of years to write. I'm not a very fast writer, but and then I thought, man, people were saying this, people need to hear this. It's a very valid and topical, you know, life story that people could really benefit from. So that's what happened.
Well, give us a little outline of the book. And the book we're talking about is It's Life, Jim, by Jim Marjoram, our guest on the program. I'll give you some websites you can go to get information and order the book throughout the course of the program today. But talk about the outline. It's more than just a story. You really share a lot and you guide people who have questions just like you did, and hopefully prevent them from going through decades of their lives where they're totally confused and miserable, to be quite honest. Talk about the outline of the book, because you really lay it out in such a way that you're going to be able to help and already helping many people.
Yeah, it was interesting. First, it started off as an autobiographical thing, but I'm just too outside the box to continue that sort of thing. I'm a bit sort of artistic sort of person. I'm a muso and I do a lot of writing. So the book ended up a little bit quirky in some ways. I ended up with bits of poetry thrown through it. And as it progresses, the second half of the book really focuses on the way I unraveled my faith, my belief system, and how I came to terms with being gay and all, how it all worked together. And that in particular has helped a lot of people as I just reveal my own thought processes and where I've finally come to now. So, yeah, it's not your average autobiography. Memoirs maybe would be a better word, yeah.
Well, and it's easy to read because of what you described as possibly a quirky style. It's very interesting the way you make the presentation and tell your story. And the reviews have been excellent in helping so many people that have gone through the struggle that you went through. Let's talk about, at one point you talk about the conversion therapy. And I'm interested in that because that's of such controversy here in the United States and obviously in many other countries and probably New Zealand as well. Talk about, explain conversion therapy and your experiences with it.
It's a very broad topic, actually. Yes. I mean, in a nutshell, it's often referred to as pray the gay away in a Christian context. There are conversion therapy practices that aren't particularly religious, and they're a whole nasty thing all in their own right. But primarily, it's in a Christian or religious context. For myself, it started way back in when I was about 20 in the form of deliverance ministry, where they thought you were gay because you had demons. So they spent time trying to cast the demons out. From then on, as I went through the years, I discovered there were lots of variations on that, where people would pray for you and pseudo counseling. You know, it wasn't really proper counseling. It was just sort of asking God to heal you and so on. Yep. It wasn't until later on that I became aware of official conversion therapy groups such as Living Waters was the one I was part of, and I explained that quite a bit. The whole process is revealing that being LGBT in some form is against God's plan or the way we are designed. So the whole process is finding some way to make us straight. And it's usually assumption is that we're broken in some way and we need to be fixed. And these large organizations all around the world have been created, right through to small little ministries in little churches around the place, where they apply a basic set of principles to hopefully make you straight. Of course, it doesn't work now.
Well, yes. What were your experiences like? Did that just reinforce this thought that you had of yourself, and negative thought you had of yourself, that this was something that really should go away? This is not right.
Constantly.
Yes.
That was right from my first religious experiences as a late teenager. It became apparent that according to the religious traditions I was believing in, was that there was no way I could be gay. It just wasn't acceptable, not only culturally, of course, but in any religious beliefs. So it was a constant life of shame and guilt, and everything I did was sort of built on that shame and guilt to change. I mean, I pleaded and prayed. I did everything I possibly could to become straight. And that in itself brings along mental illness. So I constantly battled with depression and anxiety and suicide ideation all my life.
Jim Arterim is our guest on This Week in America. His book is called It's Life, Jim. It's available at authorreputationpress.com, of course, Amazon, the other places. His website is itslifejim.pub, and another website we'll talk about in the program is silentgaze.com. I have all of that on a website, so you can go there and check that out and link on to get information on the book, information on Jim, and then go from there. It's interesting, this battle that you were going through to find out and acknowledge who you really are on one side, religion on the other side. Why did you get so involved in religion, especially fundamentalism and many Pentecostal churches?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I wasn't brought up particularly religious at all. My parents were just sort of nominal churchgoers, you know, a couple of times a year. But I had a sort of a spiritual experience when I was 15, which it wasn't particularly religious, but it was, you know, you get those sort of revelations of universal love or something like that. It was all a bit nebulous, but it strangely it affected me. But I thought, oh, this must be God, this must be Christian. So I just went to the local church and I embraced that as sort of a response to my own spiritual experience. But because I was battling with being gay, and I needed some way to not be gay, the church seemed to offer that the ability to do that. So I just got more and more involved until later on I became in the mid 80s, I became involved in full-on Pentecostal fundamentalist beliefs. I settled down a little bit in the late 90s. But by that stage, I was well and truly involved with the Living Waters conversion therapy organization. So, yeah, it was religion seemed to me the only solution. And I was absolutely convinced of it, despite the fact that it never worked. I thought if I hang in there long enough, it's going to work.
And you did hang in there for a long period of time, and you were married twice. When you got married, yeah, did you think that was another answer? Maybe this is what I need to do.
Yes, it was a step of faith. It was, I was thinking, you know, I know God's going to make me straight. I know he can do it. And if I marry someone, it'll be sort of confirming this, and I'll do it. Sadly, my first marriage only lasted 3 years, and we're actually still good friends, which is lovely. So she fortunately understood the dynamic and what was going on. But yeah, the second time I married, it was more so intense. I'd had my dose of fundamentalist religion, so it was a really solid act of faith. And my wife knew I was gay, and she had battled with her own same-sex relationships, and we were determined to do it. And we thought that this intense acceptance of demonstrative religion, in particular through Pentecostalism, was going to do the job. Sadly, my second wife passed away in 2011, and by that stage it was like, I can't do this. This is too much. It's been over 40 years now, and obviously nothing's going to change. And then I had a bit of a meltdown, and I've spent the next, whatever it is now, 9 years slowly unraveling and piecing together the mess and accepting the fact that this is who I am now. So
yeah, what's interesting is what you're saying is it took a while, even when you realized I need to acknowledge who I am. What took you a while before you really came to terms with that and really felt comfortable? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
So it's not like all of a sudden you realize this and, okay, tomorrow I'm going to be a different person. I'm going to be who Jim really is. It doesn't work like that then, does it?
Not at all. No. Even as I was nursing my wife, which was nearly 2 years, I was beginning to question really not my sexuality so much as my faith. And we both were in some ways, because we were thinking all our beliefs aren't altering anything about us, what's happening around us at the moment. My wife wasn't getting healed. Nothing about me was changing with my mental health or anything like that. So I really had to slowly question everything. So after she passed away, it was really a matter of I'm free, as you know, as awkward as that sounds. Yes. But I was genuinely free to examine why I believed what I believed, and is it okay to actually be a gay man? And it took about 4 years to finally sort of be comfortable with all that.
Jim Arjoram, our guest on the program, he's the author of the book It's Life, Jim. Books available at authorreputationpress.com, Amazon, of course, as well. His website is itslifejim.pub. The other website for information is silentgaze.com. Let's talk about that for a second, because that's so important. What do you do at silentgaze.com, and how has this been helping people?
It's set up to primarily help people who, LGBT people who have battled with religion, who've basically been through the similar situation to myself. But there's a lot of LGBT Christian and religious sites that are very supportive, and that's fantastic. So a lot of people have maintained their faith and accepted who they are, and there are wonderful LGBT affirming churches and so on. But there's a lot of people who have gone beyond that, and they would never set foot in a church again. So I'm here to help. Through Silent Gaze, I present resources, support groups, where people are free to actually question everything. It doesn't matter what your religious backgrounds are. If you've been affected adversely in some way or even abused through your religious beliefs and churches and so on, it's a safe space where you can share that and find new hope and ways forward. And just a safe space to do that.
Those are two words you don't usually hear together, religion and abuse. Talk about that, because that is something that you address, and you just mentioned doing that with Silent Gaze. Talk about that concept.
Yes, it's a very controversial term in itself, because when you're in it, for example, when I was in Living Waters, I became a leader in Living Waters as well. So I was actually administering and working with helping make gay people straight. But part of that process is you're building shame and guilt in people. You're telling them that they're fundamentally broken when they're not. And that's a form of abuse. That's a very serious form of mental abuse. It's yes. like you're saying, telling someone that something that's naturally a part of them is actually seriously wrong and not approved by God in any way. So that's a psychological abuse. There are forms of where it has involved some sort of physical abuse, but that's pretty rare now, where they used to put electrodes on you and all sorts of horrible things. But we're talking about psychological abuse here. And sometimes, especially when if it refers to demonic stuff, where they believe, you know, you've got gay demons inside you, that is extremely abusive. And you ask any psychologist, you know, mental health expert, to be told that you have demons living inside you is not a good look at all. So that's the foundation for the type of abuse that we're talking about.
Talk about the link between that and mental health, especially for the LGBT group that you were talked about, because mental health issues thrown around a lot often, and it appears the mental health issue is when you keep telling people of the LGBT community that you're broken. If you hear that enough, that creates mental issues unto itself, doesn't it?
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. And it sets up, especially in this religious context, it sets up what they call cognitive dissonance, where you have two totally conflicting realities. One is your faith, which says there's something wrong with you, you're broken, but God loves you. And the other side is the reality that you're LGBT and nothing can change that. No matter how you try to do it, nothing can change it. So you've got these two totally conflicting concepts in your head. And when we have cognitive dissonance, that then comes out in mental illnesses, usually like depression and anxiety. But in extreme cases, people can kill themselves over it because it's impossible to resolve the two conflicts. And sadly, the suicide rates amongst LGBT religious people is one of the highest demographics of anywhere, especially if you're trans people. I think it's about 40% of trans people in religious contexts have tried to kill themselves.
Well, that's
it's just horrific.
Yeah, such a tragedy. And your book is so important because of that. Jim Marjoram, our guest on the program, if you're looking that up, that's Marjoram. The book is called It's Life, Jim. It's available at authorreputationpress.com. Amazon, his website is itslifejim.pub and silentgaze.com for more information. Time going by way too quickly here. And I mentioned in the beginning, you were a man of faith. Is past tense correct, or are you a man of faith now? Where do you stand with that?
These days I would call myself definitely not Christian. I think I've dropped all pretense of having that, but these days, I'm a spiritual person. I couldn't become an atheist, but my whole concept of God, spirituality and religion is very open, very fluid. I personally encourage people to find whatever form of spirituality works for them and is actually based on integrity and honesty, personal honesty. So we sort of, one of my catch cries is to find out why we believe what we believe. And that requires personal honesty and integrity. So for me, I'm constantly questioning, why do I believe that? And is it good for me to believe that? Is it helpful to me? Is it helpful to the community and humanity in general? And I think that's where I try to help people understand what they believe, and for myself.
We've got a couple of minutes left in the program. I want to go back to religious abuse once again. What do you say to people that feel they are being, especially after hearing your description, that there is such a thing as religious abuse, and they feel they may be victimized by it? How do they go forward? What should they do?
A lot of the resources I provide there are to do with finding your own self-worth. That's a crucial aspect of it. But to do that requires a lot of support. One thing I would suggest is to try and find LGBT support groups that are outside of a religious context. Go to a counselor, a therapist who is not a Christian, and who can help you process what's really been done to you. Because it all manifests in emotional ways. And a lot of the time you haven't not allowed to express the emotions that are really going on inside you. So you need safe spaces to do that. Peer support, I provide peer support in Silent Gaze, but again, there's so many groups around. where you've can find people that you can relax with and identify the journeys they've been on. But it's not an easy journey by any means. It's the same as recovering from any form of abuse. You really need support. It's very hard to do it on your own.
And that's why I think the book resonates so well, is you're very realistic in talking about your problems. It took you a number of years to get to the point where you address those. And I think in closing here, I think one of the messages that comes across, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is it's never too late to go back, pick up the pieces, and go through the healing process and find out who you really are. If you were not a teenager when you came to this realization. So I think you're saying it really is never too late to address these. You did it later in life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Never too late. And there's people older than myself who have finally sort of, it's almost, you basically say you got the guts to do it. I think that for a lot of people that comes to that, they might have niggling things going along all their lives that I can't do this, I've got to change. But it takes a massive step. And the older you get, the harder that gets, for sure, because you've got a lot of long-term ingrained habits and thought patterns. So it's difficult, but it's once you make that step, it's absolutely fantastic.
And there are missteps along the way, as Jim points out in his book, and you can recover from those because he was able to do that. And now, because of writing his book, it's like Jim, able to help other people. Jim Marjoram, our guest on the program. Again, that's Marjoram. The book is It's Life, Jim. You can find it at authorreputationpress.com. Available at Amazon, of course, as well. Jim's website is itslifejim.pub. His website is silentgaze.com as well, with great information there. You can link onto all of those by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Jim, a pleasure having you on the program. Excellent work that you're doing out there in sharing your story, which had to be emotional and painful for you to sit down and to share all of this, but you're helping so many other people in the process. Thank you for taking some time to be with us on the program.
Thank you, Rick. Really appreciate it.
It has been a pleasure having you with us, Jim Marjoram. The book is It's Life, Jim. Of course, all the information available on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.